thanks for coming. This panel is entitled Low Power to the People. Top Panda. If anybody doesn't have any flyers, I have a stack up here of some of my favorite low power and pirate radio related web links. Very, very exciting time if, you know, you're a little guy like I am. It's always been a radio enthusiast all their life. I worked as a DJ at a radio station for about 3 years, doing the graveyard shift from 12 to 5 a.m. After a couple of years, I realized the job was bullshit. Boring, you don't get to play your own music, you know. Johnny Fever on WKRP in Cincinnati is a fictional character. You don't get to choose your own music, you know, it's all laid out for you. And, you know, basically it just becomes another job. You go in and you punch your time card and you walk out. It's really interesting, and I'm not really too keen on the details of why the FCC decided to finally reverse decades of, you know, basically supporting the big business and keeping the airwaves out of the hands of the individual or the small groups. It's a very cool thing that's going on here right now with the FCC. Basically, what's going on is they're getting ready to start licensing low-power FM radio stations. There's going to be two classes of them. There's going to be 100-watt stations and 10-watt stations. Now, on the surface, that might not sound like a lot of power because you see some of these stations that are pushing 50,000 watts, you know, and have a listening radius of, you know, literally to the visible horizon of the radio spectrum. A well-placed antenna in a city, the FCC claims that a 100-watt signal should die out after, I think, about, I think it's 5.4 kilometers. I've heard of 100 watts going a hell of a lot further than that. It has to do with your antenna placement, that sort of thing. But, you know, basically, what's going on right now is they are in the first phase of licensing or what they call construction permits. If you live in Georgia, unfortunately, there's some bad news for you because you missed the first filing window. I believe they extended it till May 8th of this year, or June 8th. Of course, we're well past June 8th. I was one of the lucky ones who got my application in on time, and I am currently pending approval from the FCC to go ahead and start building my station in my basement. There's kind of a catch-22 to it, though. The low-power FM stations are going to be available for three different groups, educational institutions, universities, schools, public safety organizations, you know, towns that want to basically broadcast traffic reports, school closings, that sort of thing. And then there's the third category, which I believe falls under educational organizations, which is a very, very broad term, as you understand as well as I do. Basically, you can start your own nonprofit radio group. You know, Radio Enthusiasts of Atlanta. You can start a church group. The licenses are not available to people as individuals. Low power FM radio licenses are not available to you as an individual. You have to be affiliated with a nonprofit organization. One of the interesting things is you don't necessarily have to be registered with the IRS as a nonprofit. You can basically set up your own little club and say, we're, you know, Joe's Radio Enthusiast Group. And from what I understand, that is, reading over the paperwork from the FCC, that is about all the credentials you need to go through with the application process. We have a question?
Before we start, there are two simple rules. One, raise your hand, please be recognized. And two, we are recording, so please use the microphone. things go a lot more smoothly.
If I understand this correctly, what that means is that you cannot use it for commercial purposes.
This is correct. All low-power FM stations are quote-unquote non-commercial. And it's really interesting because in the paperwork for the application for a low-power FM license, they don't really go into depth as to what non-commercial is. I mean, non-commercial, PBS is non-commercial, but they do have commercials. They do play commercials. I don't think you can, you know, that's one thing that I'm really interested in. Can I, you know, am I allowed to sell advertising on the station to help recoup some of the expenses that go along with operating something like this, or is it just a total ban on all commercials together? You know, anything where you're being paid to do a service for an advertiser. Let's see. Okay, he's here.
Yay!
Hey, Johnny X.
Better late than never.
Fun adventures getting here. Parking.
He's got his propaganda too.
Fucking lane. 30-mile stretch from Chattanooga. He's got to screwed up all my handouts, and I had to basically take over a machine there and say, "Look, get out of my way. I used to run one of these stores. I know what I'm doing. You don't. Here, take handouts, read them, enjoy them. I'm going to throw them at y'all."
Here he is to save the day.
Yeah, that'll work. PBS effectively. Hey, give these out,
some
too.
Some of my propaganda, too.
Yeah, cool. I'll hand these puppies out, too. Come to Freaknik, the national Freaknik. It's a hacker con. Not that you
yes,
know.
It's not the Freaknik that is associated with Atlanta. It's entirely different. Yeah, go ahead.
Can you guys stall for a minute? I got to pee real bad.
Sure.
Is that mic on?
Sure.
Oops.
Okay. So basically, my application with the FCC is pending right now. It was kind of cool. I went out to my out to their website and I saw the application out there. The loophole that I got around, basically, because again, like I said, you can't be an individual and apply for a low power FM license. The way I got around this was I went out and I got myself ordained on one of these online ministries, and I set up my own church in my basement. Okay. I'm nonprofit. All right. So whether the FCC is going to buy that or not remains to be seen. But of course, I can always argue this thing to the Supreme Court. I mean, I am legally an ordained minister by the Universal Life Church, and isn't everyone? Yeah, really. Let's see a show of hands here. Who is ordained in the audience? Who would like to be afterwards? You can talk to either myself or Johnny X. We'll do it up here at the table. You know, boom, you're ordained. That's about all it takes. But basically, my application is pending now. Another interesting thing is we actually did invite the FCC to come and sit on us with the panel. We actually invited them. I actually went and knocked on their door at their Atlanta field office. And turns out I bumped into the actual director of the office on his way back from lunch. He's like, "Can I help you?" Looking at me kind of strange. I mean, because I had to actually dig around to find the address of this office. It's strictly, I was told, their office here is strictly an enforcement office. In other words, they go out and they shut down the pirate radio stations. They didn't even have a secretary sitting at the window. I mean, you know, just in a little business office in or business park in Duluth. Unfortunately, about 5.5 miles away from where I live. So I am, like, literally within earshot of their Atlanta-based, you know, office. I'm thinking, okay, this is cool. If I get my own FM station here, you know, you put the antenna up an extra 100 feet, you know. Okay, oh, is that amplifier really doing 100 watts or is it doing 350 watts, you know? I'm thinking, okay, I can play, you know, stupid here. Gosh, I don't know. This is the equipment that these guys sold me, you know. Unfortunately, these guys are so close that they could literally come and decide to do a station inspection on their lunch break. So, unfortunately for me, I kind of have to be on my best behavior with them living right around the corner. But So, but I did ask him, really nice gentleman by the name of Fred Bros, and he said he had reservations about attending. He said, I'm afraid that we might get ourselves into, quote-unquote, an embarrassing situation because we have shut down a lot of pirate radio stations, and this is the entire southeast center of operations right here. So, I mean, I tried two or three times to get them to change their mind, and they finally wrote back to me, emailed me back, and said this is an off-limits topic for them right now. So they wussed out on us. But it was kind of interesting. So my application is pending. I did have the opportunity to ask him how long he thinks the application, how long it's going to be before they start granting construction permits. He did not have an answer for me, which probably means we're looking at, you know, 2 or 3 years, knowing the way the federal government works. But the good news is for me is that my application is in, and it's waiting to be approved right now. So once I get the go-ahead to build the station, I'm going to be in the market to buy some equipment. I know you said that to talk to you, so I'll have to get your email address before you leave. Fuller, do you have anything you want to say?
I'm not exactly in the broadcasting for radio and stuff. I've mainly done it as a robotics enthusiast. I'm trying to build a robot that hopefully next year I'll have it built. I kind of died this year with school and everything, that will come around and talk to everybody via a low-powered transmitter. Just mainly I've been, for the past year, trying to figure out exactly how they work. Figured out a couple, you know, how antennas work, and people want to learn exactly how you do go about learning this stuff. Just ask questions, because I've just done it and I'm still doing
sure.
it.
Like, well, I've got a lot of good links on the handout that I gave there. Good websites. There's some of them have some really good basic radio theory, because I'm not a radio engineer either, and it's kind of perplexing to me. Another question.
Stole my links, man.
Did I?
Who gets to decide if what your radio station is broadcasting is properly educational or religious or something? As you know, places like Consumer Reports often gets in trouble for being a little too educational.
Yeah, that's a very good question. And the fact that they're allowing religious organizations to get involved, I don't think the FCC is really going to take a stance as diligently as they do with major broadcast stations, because the way they look at it, okay, their signal is only going to radiate out for 5 miles and then it's going to die off, in theory.
They're still going to pass it off as community standards, kind of, to avoid any of the responsibility or blame, and only have to do enforcement if it's absolutely necessary. So, if you're not doing anything horribly terrible that has people showing up at your station with pitchforks and torches, you probably won't be shut down.
Yep.
Check! Thanks.
Well, I've done a bunch of gabbing here. Johnny X, why don't you go ahead and speak?
All right, we're doing the basic intro stuff.
Sure.
All right. Johnny X, I've been involved with radio for a while. I'm a recovering broadcast journalism major, and I was involved with a pirate radio station down in Gainesville, Florida, back in the late 80s, WRAG, Radio Alternative Gainesville. Get on the rag, 2 watts of raw power. Bottom of the FM barrel, folks, 88.3. We were as low as you could get. They upped their wattage to, 10 watts a semester after I left, and got busted a week later by the FCC, so that ended that story. I weaseled my way into WRVU, which is Vanderbilt's radio station. I used to work over there on a temporary basis and had a friend who was a DJ and signed up as a trainee one semester and just started putting myself down as an alumni. And a couple years later, everyone who knew better had graduated, so I pulled that scam off for 6 years and had a weekly show. It was the only industrial noise show in Middle Tennessee, much to the horror and relief of country music fans everywhere. And now we've got 3 hours of Japanese noise bands. So they finally legitimized me, and I lost my underground status last year. College radio is kind of weird. You can get away with a lot of stuff you can't get away with on commercial radio stations. You know, you've got 80 DJs there in 1 week going in and out, 2 hour, 3 hour shows. And they found out that their best shows and their most competent DJs were, in fact, people who had little, if any, involvement, technically, legally, with Vanderbilt University. They just kind of wandered in, too. And rather than throw, rather than get rid of their reggae DJ, their award-winning bluegrass DJ, their funk DJ, the jazz DJs, and they adjusted their manual to say, okay, we've got four categories of DJs: students, faculty and staff, alumni, and select members of the community. So I feel special now, which is kind of nice. It's really, really tough to get access to a decent transmitter. WRVU is 10,000 watts. I program my own show, play whatever I want, whenever I want, and technically the only restrictions I have are that I have to say WRVU Nashville at the top of the hour, and I can't say four of George Carlin's seven dirty words on the air. You can get away with asshole, tits, and cock now. So, we go by.
Rock on.
So. Okay. What happened while I was gone? Sorry I was late.
I just...
Parking's a bitch around here.
Basically went over the, talked about the different classes of FM, low power FM licenses that are on the board, told them all that I am a pending low power FM applicant. Thanks to the
y'all
Universal
talk
Life Church.
Yourselves while we discuss this.
What's that?
So y'all talk amongst yourselves while we discuss this.
That's okay. Pretty much it.
All right. The way this stuff seems to work best is we're here and we tell you who we are and we just do like a question and answer kind of thing, unless someone's got something more structured. I think I had something structured about 24 hours ago, but I haven't slept in a couple days, so everything's really kind of hazy, even without drugs, and that's a neat feeling, because I didn't have to pay money to get this way, so I'm babbling. Anyone got questions? Oh, come on, don't be shy. Yeah.
Can you wait for the mic, please?
Oh, we're doing that.
Phil Donahue.
Hey, cool. We'll be able to hear the answers on the real audio
this
files this
yeah.
year. Cool.
We have to normalize the hell out of it.
That was the whole idea.
Woohoo! You are a smart, smart man. Yes, sir.
Okay. I have the good fortune to be working as a contractor for a internet radio startup in Silicon Valley, and they seem to be like really pushing for just people to sign up for content and just. I don't exactly know how they work it, but they're just signing people up like left and right, and you've even got like Z92 and Sarajevo on board, and you can get Chicago air traffic control off of them, and so this is my own little. I have absolutely nothing to do with these guys financially. I'm only a contractor. I don't care if they sink or swim as long as their checks go through. So
yeah.
As long as they pay me, I'm happy. So this is a commercial free plug, but. Here's your little insidious, good little disruptive element hint for the day. You might want to talk to them, and this might be a way to get around the 5 mile radius limit. Get yourself streamed over something like this. This is actually starting up to be a big business. Some of these guys want to be do for radio what cable did for the internet, what cable did for TV in terms
and
of
the
like.
Internet.
And the internet, in terms of like, 1,000 channels of nothing or everything, depending on how you look at it.
So in other words, they're running like a real audio server that you can stream to.
Real audio, or actually their own custom technology, and there's a guy, one of my best friends, is actually like writing their ad insertion software, which is totally stompable. I asked him, well, like, what do you do if somebody locally decides to insert their own ad? Well, that's the point. So if you want to add, it sounds like if you want to add, insert your own ads for the First Church and the Naked Elvis.
Hack the broadcast.
You can. Exactly. Hack the broadcast and hack the net and talk to some of these places, because this might be a good way to beat that tiny little regional limit.
Yeah, I didn't want to get totally sidetracked here, since we're supposed to be talking theoretically, technically about low-power FM broadcast, but streaming audio over the net, you know, everyone's pushing for video. There's going to be a hell of a lot of bandwidth for audio, which means any freak in the world who's got any kind of decent access will be able to broadcast all over the planet, and that just gives me a big woody. That's a wonderful thing. If y'all check on one of the low-power to the people flyers here, I've got a link for a guy up in Nashville, Wolf FM, www.wolffm.com. He's running a combo 1 watt plus a real audio. It's either real audio or Shoutcast. By the way, Shoutcast is free, and you can use free Winamp with that. But this guy is, in addition to doing the 1 watt thing, he's doing the real audio feed or Shoutcast feed as well. He's blind. Built the whole station himself. And he's usually on 3-4 hours a day, and you know, this guy can do it. Hey, everybody in this room can do it.
I'm straight. Any other questions? Come on.
Well, let's bring it full circle here. Is the streaming audio over the internet going to make this whole low-power FM thing irrelevant?
I don't probably not.
I don't think so.
Not for a long time. You're not going to be able to listen to streaming audio over the internet in your car, you know, or on the beach, or, you know, granted, you're only...
I beg to differ, but I'll get to that in a minute.
Well, this is true.
One more wireless. Broadband wireless is becoming more and more commonplace, and people are really pushing for that, I think we'll probably be in a weird position where you won't be able to get broadcast licenses from the FCC, but you'll be able to stream your real audio or Shoutcast or whatever open source project evolves after that out through wireless digital technology through computers. You know, it's all merging: radios, computers, TV, and you'll basically have your little wireless unit here. And you want to watch the tube, or do you want to listen to someone in Uganda playing you know, Balinese heavy metal or something? Yes, ma'am.
There also are stations on the internet that do streaming MP3s. And you have streaming MP3 access. You build your own server at home, and you broadcast through their website. And let's face it, it sounds a hell of a lot better than real audio. It doesn't doesn't have the, you know, the broadband that you can use right now.
There, okay. Yeah, there are a lot of commercial radio stations nowadays that are playing MP3s. The DJ will bring a laptop in and jack it into the soundboard and have their playlist ready to go, and and hit, you know, play, and then go upstairs to the pub and get drunk for the next hour and come back and do a station ID. Not that I would do that, of course.
I've got a link on side two of my page here for Web Jockey, which is very, very good automation software. I think it sells for about $80. Very, very nice looking user interface. Very powerful. And believe me, I've tried just about every piece of automation software out there that didn't require a standalone proprietary daughter board to actually run. But I've had some experience for this. It was actually intended to be used for this sort of thing, for doing webcasts. But it lends itself extremely well to broadcast uses as well. So if you're interested,
you
check it out.
I tell you, he's doing a lot of the MP3 shows right now. Every single deadhead out there who has the entire Grateful Dead bootleg catalog discography taking up 80 gig of drive space is determined to play it all.
Yeah. So 2 years worth of music. No.
As long as I don't have to reboot, I'm set.
Yeah. Linux. One word: Linux. Let's give the penguin a hand.
BSD. BSD.
BSD.
I'm from
ABM, anything but Microsoft.
Amen. I'm from Nashville, and I've been looking into Radio Free Nashville. And do you know anything about the progress of their current license?
Yeah. Bo Hunter is the guy you need to talk to, and I've got the website on the page there. Okay, yeah, cool. Last time I checked, which was probably back in, March, I think, we weren't, Tennessee, we weren't able to
apply for licenses yet. I believe we're going to be able to by the end of the year, and they're poised and they're ready to go, and they're raising money. And in fact, Bo's going to be at Freaknik up in Nashville in November, and we've given him some space to set up and talk about it, and we're probably going to be running a shoutcast and a one watt out of the con up there too. So being in Nashville, you should come by. It's free. Also, hit the website and get on their mailing list because they have monthly meetings, and you'll see us all there.
Something I spent a couple years in radio, and it's been a family thing, going back a couple generations. And something that, you know, getting on is only the first step that I've seen in people becoming DJs. Do y'all have any pointers, links on your website or support groups for teaching people the basics of formatting, of laying out a show, of making sure it's not repetitive, of what the proper mix is? I mean, for any type of music, the rules generally apply, and most people who get access immediately get on and they talk for 30 minutes. They play a song. They talk for another 30 minutes. They play the same song again.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
Go ahead.
Best thing you can do is record your shows. And then listen to them, like when you're in the car playing back, and you'll be appalled the first few weeks and realize what an idiot you sound like when you babble, and friends will, you know, if you're riding around with friends, they'll ask, well, what was that song that was playing? And you realize, oh, I didn't ID the song or anything like that. Listen to other DJs carefully. Start listening with kind of an idea of, okay, what are they doing that I can't see to make this run smooth? And listening to your tapes and just kind of planning things out in advance and listening to other DJs, especially if they're at the same station you're working at, go to their shows, you know, and hang out with them and see how they get things going smooth. For my shows, there's usually anywhere between 3 to 12 people hanging out at the radio station, something to do on a Saturday night. And I've got a lot of people who are answering phones and pulling music, and it works well that way. So,
yeah, I'm a alumni of the Columbia School of Broadcasting. So, that seems to be something that they really can't teach you. They had, when I was going to broadcasting school, they had a mock station. Obviously you weren't sending a signal out, but you would tape yourself, tape your show. You know, you were working with a standard broadcasting board, that sort of thing. And it's repetitive. It's doing it over and over again. And he is absolutely right. The first few times you listen to the tape, you're like, good God, what an idiot I sound like. I think you, it just comes with practice.
Also, if you live in the Atlanta area, I believe it's Georgia Tech does have their own transmitting station. I think it's 88.5 or something like that.
WREK? Yeah, 91.1.
And if you listen to it, all the time they just have students that are doing...
I'm a tech student. I'm opping at REC. It's 91.1. 88.5 is Georgia State, and they're a bunch of communication majors who play a lot more accessible stuff, let's say.
Oops, I think I did it again.
Just get the record straight.
Okay.
I'm actually very excited about my application. I plugged in my geographical location into the FCC's station locator, and it turned out there were about 5 or 6 open frequencies in my vicinity, and only about myself and 2 other people in the town that I live in actually applied. So, I mean, I may actually be on the air one day. So. I think I said that already. Oh, well.
With the new FCC rules, have you heard of situations where multiple groups would apply for licenses and one person is actually transmitting and then everybody else is just rebroadcasting the same signal? And does the FCC
repeater
allow that?
I haven't heard anything about that. But
I haven't heard anything about that.
The way FCC will hand out conflicting licenses, you know, when you have more than one group requesting a license in a vicinity, there's a point system. You can claim points on your application if you're going to be broadcasting at least 8 hours a day. And basically they add up. If you're in competition with another group, basically you can band together with that other group, and you can combine your points together put that on you. In other words, basically what you have is a group application. No. It's still 100 watts, still limited to 100 watts. Or 10 watts, depending on the license.
Which will actually carry pretty well depending on where your antenna is located. There's a 200-watt station at Middle Tennessee State University, southeast of Nashville. And they're about 30 miles southeast of Nashville, and their signal carries for a good 20-25-mile radius. And it's not bad. I mean, you can cover a lot of area with that, especially when you're just outside a metropolitan area.
You can also get a directional antenna. And, if you live north of a city or a major metropolitan area where you want to broadcast to, you can radiate out in that direction. You can get some more distance that way, too.
Something good to do would be get together with your local ham radio operators and just kind of experiment with antenna designs and tweaking, you know, which direction you're heading, and get reception reports from a wide variety of people, and if they're not ham radio operators involved with your low power FM project already.
What's your read on the future of licensing policies? Do you think it's going to get more and more liberalized, or is it a current battleground? And if so, what are the organizations to support that are lobbying the FCC to liberalize the policies, i.e. when can we have commercial low-power stations?
Why would you want commercial low-power stations?
Well, scratch commercial, but when can you have more powerful stations, for example?
Well, you have a finite amount of airspace, you have to realize, and there's only so much space to go around. I mean, I believe that once the low-power FM, the existing low-power FM stations are filled, the licenses are filled, I think that that's going to be pretty much it until they go with digital or something where they can cram more stations.
I don't think there's going to be much of a half-life for this, unfortunately. The reason for that is one word, money. You've got the National Association of Broadcasters, and they're throwing a hell of a lot of money up in D.C., telling a bunch of technically incompetent people, i.e. our elected leaders, that this is a bad thing and how much do you want us to ride out for your next campaign, re-election campaign. And they're fighting it. The National Association of Broadcasters are fighting it tooth and nail. And the main reason they're fighting it is, given the alternative, listening to the same boring top 40 crap of whatever format is out there, Or given the opportunity to listen to maybe one of half a dozen or possibly even a dozen if you're in a enough area, low power stations, they see their listening base eroding, and therefore their ability to charge advertising rates erode.
All right, so let me back up and just ask a more fundamental question. How did this happen? Who made this happen?
Who was it, Kennard?
William Kennard.
Yeah, I don't know if he had a brain embolism or if God appeared to him, a vision or whatever, but all of a sudden,
the FCC is the good
guys.
50
years worth of restrictive licensing had just suddenly been reversed.
And they're actually fighting for us. They're actually, the NAB, they have a bill in Congress right now to limit the number of low-power FM stations that go on. Right now, I think you have to be separated by... Was it two or three channels?
Two channels. They were pushing originally for three-channel separation, which would have meant the only low-power stations that would have come into existence would have been like out in the middle of Nevada somewhere 100 miles away from any city. The FCC originally was pushing for a single-channel separation, and these are the guys, love them, hate them. They have been managing the airwaves since the 30s and doing a pretty decent job of it. And the reason they lost on single channel, although that might come back, is the National Association of Broadcasters circulated this bogus CD up around Congress that it's on one of the links on here, too. I forget which one. Propaganda and Disinformation. Hit that link, and you'll be able to hear some of the CD they put together. It's basically a bunch of static and overlapping stations they generated to say, this is what will happen if we allow low-power FM. The FM band will go to hell. You won't be able to listen to anything. It'll be chaos and anarchy.
Crosstalk.
Money.
Their concern was about a lot of crosstalk, and they basically circulated a fraudulent CD with their demonstration of what the interference from a low power FM station would sound like on a directly adjacent channel, and the FCC came around and said wrong, and they circulated their own CD. Unfortunately, it passed through the House. It's sitting in the bill is sitting in the Senate right now, where I fortunately don't think it has enough momentum to carry.
Like this, National Association of Broadcast Executives with open checkbooks, FCC, who actually have been managing the spectrum space for decades. Who do you think Congress listened to?
I have a question.
Exactly.
I have a question about the cost of getting into this. He was asking about commercial radio, and you said, well, why would you want to make a commercial? I imagine there's a good bit of money it costs. You had licensing fees. Applications, did you not?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay.
The application was free. Now, this is not a station license. This is an application for a construction permit.
So, if you get that construction permit, what kind of fees are you looking at?
They've been very, very hush hush. I don't know if there's going to be any kind of fees that are incurred. If there are, I would assume that they will be very modest.
Think about it. You know, there are churches who are wanting to do this stuff too. If you spec out just the hardware, you can do it easily for under $500 and have a very good sounding station.
Unfortunately, one of the things that's a setback for me is what I understand is they're only going to approve FCC approved transmitters to use.
Understanding. Yeah, I saw that.
So that jumps the price jumps up, you know. You can get a 300 or a 100 watt transmitter for about $500 or less. I don't know. I haven't priced them in a while, but I was looking on the web, and some of the FCC approved transmitters putting out that kind of power were the price easily doubled or tripled. So
they're kind of playing around with that, though. It may not affect the end price ultimately that much, depending on what they decide they're going to do and what they're going to implement. Still in a state of flux.
Yeah.
I didn't know if anybody wanted some gossip on Kennard. He was responsible for raiding our station in Tampa. Was it 2 years ago?
98. Yeah, they were talking about that on National Public Radio. In fact, I was talking about pirate radio here and mentions all the raids going on in Miami and Tampa.
Right. Yeah. Tampa pirate radio 102.1. That's okay. I was there that day. They came in with automatic weapons and had a gun to our owner's head. Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Shades of Radio Caroline.
And just to let you know, if you ever get raided, they take everything with an FCC sticker on it. Not just the radio equipment. They will take CDs. They will take your personal home equipment, your security system. They will take everything, just to let you know.
They take your CDs and records, too?
They take everything. Televisions, VCRs, cameras.
Anything that's not nailed down.
Right.
And even if it's nailed down, they probably
yes, on your person as well.
Who did they bring in with the automatic weapons?
U.S. Marshals, the FBI was there, and the local police, county and city police were all there. The county and city police are sitting there going, man, this sucks. We had a good radio station.
Yeah, it's funny. You can usually hang out with BS and get away with stuff like that with your local law enforcement folks.
Right, they were really cool. They came to our rallies at the FCC building downtown there in the Hamilton Bank building, if anybody's familiar with Tampa. They came to our rallies and, like, put stickers on their cars, and it was great. But anyway, Kennard was responsible for our raid, and we just found out, probably December or January, that the person above him, one of the directors, found out that he had torn down this station in Texas, and then the guy paid Kennard a large sum of money, and all of a sudden the station reappeared. Let's think about this. So this director is like been on Kennard's ass, and instead of firing him, I guess Kennard has decided to change his tune, which is leading to this.
Well, you should ask him if you can have your stuff back now.
You know, it's probably so old
it's gone.
By now. I'd love to have the CDs back, but
right, and sell them on eBay.
Exactly.
Probably get lots of money there.
Y'all want to hear the polite refusal email we got from the FCC? Patrick, we will not be able to attend. The LPFM topic is off limits at the present time. As I told you, our only involvement is with unauthorized stations, not the application process and other such issues. We just bust them. We don't want to talk about this new crop of loonies coming up. Thanks for the invite and for stopping by. If you have other inquiries, please let me know.
Yeah, that was the polite email that I got the other day. I was telling them, I don't think I've told you this yet, Jenny.
Got their email address and phone number.
They're only 5 miles away from my house. I kind of have to behave myself.
Hey, did you talk to whoever it was who showed up at AtlantaCon?
No, I missed that.
Oh, okay.
No, I was scuba diving in the Keys at the time, but.
Well, the people who were doing that were originally told that it was a 10-watt transmitter, but they weren't told about the 60 to 80-watt exciter that had been added to it until the next day, and apparently they'd been stomping all over WREK's signal for about 36 hours, which one of the AtlantaCon people discovered when he went home to grab some extra computer gear and said, you know, I could hear you all about 17 or 18 miles away, and I just kept driving to see where your signal faded out, and it finally stopped causing interference at about 25 miles. How much power are you all putting out? So anyway, we had to go find those people and tell them to stop that about the time the FCC showed up.
I just had a question going back to the political topic. If anyone had any idea of like just how hot of an issue this might be in the fall election, is this kind of like under the radar? Do you think if one candidate or another gets elected, if anybody's really going to care? Or if, you know, I mean, like, okay, say it is, and, you know, new commissioner, you know, somebody gets appointed at the FCC. Are these applications just kind of like out there and unretrievable and they have to go through with this, or are they going to just like stomp it in another 3 months?
Oh, like I was saying, there is a bill in Congress right now. You know, they could theoretically kill this thing before it ever even has a chance to happen and limit us to three adjacents. The good thing is I don't think it has enough momentum in Congress to carry right now. And number two, Clinton is a canard supporter. So even if the bill were to come to him, I think it would probably hit a veto and have to start all over again. But
from what I've read, depending on who wins the election, Gore would probably support it. Bush probably wouldn't.
That's kind of what I was afraid of.
Worst case scenario, we're going to get access, and if we don't get it analog broadcast, we're going to get it digital broadcast. So even if low power FM gets stomped, don't let that stop you from screwing around with shoutcast servers and trying to mess around with, say, Ricochet wireless cards and see if you can set up a wireless LAN over a few areas and experiment with friends and stuff like that, because it's all going to go digital eventually, and at that point I think it's going to be a lot easier for folks to broadcast. So it's going to be weird and interesting to see what happens. Yeah. Anyone else?
Bueller?
Hey.
Bueller?
Kind of a question. When you get a license like that, is there a limit on what you can broadcast?
Hell
like?
No. I mean, well, I mean, within, you know, like Johnny X was saying, college radio stations are generally a lot more liberal in what they can get away with, I would assume, you know, LPFM. The FCC, mind you, they cannot dictate to you what you can broadcast.
So you can, like,
still going to need to do the station ID at the top of the hour, avoid, four of the seven dirty words, and not get into slander
like
or something
sure,
like that.
Sure, meter readings will be mandatory as well, so... I don't think it's going to be that different.
They'll probably have, if it works out the way we hope it does, basic technical type stuff. just to ensure that your equipment's not causing interference with anyone else's and that it's working properly. And I don't have any issues with that. Yeah, the ham radio guys can get along with the technical requirements, and you actually have to learn how the stuff works and make sure it works properly. I don't see any reason why the low-power FM crew can't do it, too, and it'll lead to better-sounding radio anyway, so do it. Is that it? Are we done? We don't have to leave. No one comes in after us. Anyone want to order a pizza?
Can I go get some beer?
Yeah. Hell yeah. Where's the beer?
That probably comes tomorrow. No, Saturday. That's
Saturday.
Saturday. Yeah.
They still work even after you terminate the service. It's up to you to hack them, but they're very aggressive about seeking each other out. So it's very easy. And Ricochet is surprisingly forthcoming with details on how to do this and how to get it to work with things other, like other operating systems besides, you know, the ones it was originally designed for. So
there's all
those
sorts
are
of
definitely some if you've got one, and they can be had cheaply because people usually just figure, oh, I canceled the service, it's not worth anything. You can pick them up for like a few bucks from people who just I see them on eBay and on for sale lists all the time. I've got two at home.
The wireless stuff is a lot of fun to play with. That's virgin territory there, just begging to be exploited.
One of the interesting things that we haven't touched on is, you know, if you're playing music, you even as a low-power FM station, even as a college radio station, these stations are still liable to pay BMI and ASCAP, royalty fees. So this is a very interesting thing with them saying that these stations cannot be, quote-unquote, they have to be non-commercial. Where is my operating budget supposed to come from? That's why I'm wondering if non-commercial means not playing any commercials whatsoever, or basically becoming a non-profit and, you know, you just at the end of the year when you do your filing with the IRS, you can't show a profit. I'm not sure how that's going to work.
The RIAA, they were originally as opposed to it as the NAB, but once they figured out how they could get their cut, they became a lot friendlier to it. And they've actually figured out what they... Say again? Yeah. They actually figured out what they were going to do with all the people who were doing Shoutcast streams, and they were cracking down on the Shoutcast folks for a while, and finally came up with the licensing scheme where you pay a flat $50, $100 a year, something like that. It's not terrible, and it's doable on a college budget, and they're happy because, you know, they're getting their cut. And you've got a little piece of paper that says, yes, I can do this, leave me the hell alone. And at this point, as much power and influence as they have, it's almost easier just to, you know, throw $50, $100 at them a year and say, like, yeah, give me the license and then leave me alone, all right? Here's your bribe. Don't bother me anymore. Yeah, same thing, we pay your income taxes each year.
I was just curious, you were talking about the FCC enforcement of the station powers. Do they look at your equipment to see if you've got a 100-watt broadcaster, or do they say, no matter how wimpy your power is, if we can hear it from over here that's too far away, then it's too powerful? Is it footprint or is it equipment?
I think they actually... I would believe, in fact, I'm 99.9% certain they have the right... to come in and inspect your equipment at any time. You know, if they come knocking on your door and they say, we want to see your transmitter, you have to let them in. Of course, you know, you could stick a panel on the front of your transmitter that says 100 watts and you're actually pushing 350, so I think that they would actually have to put some test equipment on and, you know, measure how much power you're actually radiating out, which I don't even think they have to actually touch the antenna or transmitter to figure that out, do they?
Nope.
They can be...
Footprint mainly. You know, keep in mind, you can have a transmitter that's more powerful for what your license to broadcast is, as long as you don't exceed what your license to broadcast at. WRVU, we discovered about 2 years ago, a transmitter was about 360 feet higher in elevation than it was licensed to be, and at the time we were putting out 14,500 watts. You know, I'd been going for like 20 years. Oops, it took them that long to notice. So rather than physically move the transmitter, we just dropped our power down to 10,000 watts to conform with what the footprint should be, and they were happy with that. So footprint mainly, unless there's issues, and then they come look at your equipment. Next. I guess we got to get some beer into you guys to get you rowdy. Yeah. Come to Hacking 201. That's going to be fun.
No other questions? It's all right.
Everybody's asking for, like, Hacking 101 so, and 201 so they can stump us then.
That's right.
Is that it? Did everyone get flyers? I don't want to take any of these things back with me.
Yeah, really.
Here we go. We got...
I stole mine from work.
Low-power FM stuff. Yeah, I've still got like $10,000 worth of copy credit at Kinko's.
Guess that's
screw
a wrap.
Screw me out of my last paycheck, will they?
That's a wrap. The airwaves are yours.
Right,
go out and seize them.
I got some more stuff here, too. We have a little...